lessons here from Luke 15. I plan to bring 10 lessons from this chapter in the next few weeks. We will have a lesson next Sunday night on the lost sheep. Follow that with the lost coin. And then we will have a lesson on the boy as he left home. One on the boy as he returned home. One on the far country. One on the father. One on the elder brother. And one on what the prodigal did not say. I think that's 10. If I left out one, we'll get it in there somewhere. I develop a lot of series of lessons, and many of them have 10 in number because that's what I use in most of my meetings when the meeting is Sunday through Wednesday. And I'm sharing some of these lessons with you in our regular services here. Our first lesson tonight from Luke 15 is a general lesson on the subject of seeking the lost. And what I want to do in this lesson tonight is just to look at some things that are said in this chapter, especially noticing some words that will help us to put the whole chapter in proper focus. We need to realize that some people are lost, some people are saved, and some people are safe. Those that are safe are the babies, children who have not reached the age of accountability, or anyone who is not accountable to God. We believe that a person such as that is safe, as we sometimes sing the song, "Safe in the Arms of Jesus." There are those that are saved. The body of the Lord is made up of the saved. The saved are added to the church, Acts 2, 41 and 47. The saved are those that are in the body of Christ that will be delivered up to God in the end, explained in passages like Ephesians 5. If one is not safe and is not saved, he is lost. As far as I'm able to determine, there are only those three conditions in which one can be in this life: either safe, saved, or lost. And the 15th chapter of Luke probably talks about the lost more than any one passage, dealing primarily with those who are lost as erring Christians. Yet there are some indications in the first part of the chapter of those who in general are lost, those who've never come to Jesus Christ. Look, for example, in verse 4, and you find there that the man who had the sheep, it says, if he lose one. Look at that word, lose. If we lose something, that indicates that there is a problem, that it's not where it ought to be. Then later in that verse, he says, that which is lost, he hunts or goes after that which is lost until he finds it. There are three ways in that verse that the lost are mentioned. One with the word lose, one with the word lost, and then the opposite, he finds it. If he finds it, then that means it was lost. So there are three ways in that verse dealing with the sheep that indicate that some can be lost. Drop down to verse 8 as the coin is being mentioned. And you see again the word lose. Woman has 10 pieces of silver. If she lose one piece, does she not light a candle and sweep the house and seek diligently until she find it? Here she sweeps and seeks to find it. And then in verse 9 it says, when she hath found it, she calleth her friends and her neighbors together to rejoice and says, rejoice with me, for I have found the piece which I had lost. So in connection with the coin, we have these words used again. The word lose, the word find or found, and the word lost. In verse 24, in connection with the one that we call the prodigal son, this my son was dead and is alive. he was lost and is found. And in verse 32, almost the same thing is said. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again. He was lost and he is found. Notice the contrast made in two different ways here between dead and alive and lost and found. So it is evident from this chapter throughout the entire chapter that someone can be lost, that there are those who are lost. Some are lost who have never come to Christ. Jesus told his apostles and those he is sending out in Matthew 10, go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Those people certainly had not become Christians at that time. They were like some of those on Pentecost who were of a Jewish background that would need to be brought to Jesus Christ. And so definitely the Bible teaches that, and I think there's an indication of this in the first two verses of Luke 15. Really, the three stories and the parables do not start to verse 3. Notice in the first two verses, then drew near unto him all the publicans and sinners for to hear him, and the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, this man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. These were people that certainly had not become Christians at that time because the church had not been established. They had not come to Jesus Christ, so they were those who were away from Christ. And that would be those that are lost, that are in a lost condition who have never come to Jesus Christ. There are four words in those two verses that indicate those who are not saved. Some of them do not necessarily indicate that, but the circumstances of it, these words used in other places tell us that. The word publican is used. And that's used to describe a type of work. But generally speaking, those that were publicans were considered to be rather wicked in some of their ways, not honest in their dealings. Then the word sinners is used in verse 1. Sinners there would be used in the sense of those who are not Christians. The word Pharisees is used in verse 2. Pharisees were a sect of the Jews. After the church was established, they were in many instances against the church, and even before it was established, many times they would attack Christ. The scribes are mentioned, and these are the ones who should have been the ones to know the most about the Word of God because they were involved in literally making copies of it, longhand, writing it out, word for word. And yet when Jesus pronounced his woe on people in Matthew 23 and called them hypocrites, he included the scribes in those. Woe unto you hypocrites and scribes, and Pharisees are mentioned also there. And so these four words used in the first two verses here certainly can include, especially in the word sinners, and then many of these others were by their nature, as described in the Bible, guilty of sin, those who had not come to Jesus Christ. And so we see in the first part of this lesson that there are those who are lost. Someone said that maybe the reason we do not bring more people to salvation is that we are not convinced that people are lost. And I think sometimes that is the case. There may be people in this community who are not living for God, who are not in a saved condition, and we've never really thought of them as being lost. If we had somebody that was lost physically, especially if it were a child, we would all be ready to do everything we can to go out and seek to find that person that's lost. Sometimes we do not have that same kind of attitude or that same kind of urgency toward those that are lost spiritually. And one of the reasons may be because we have not really convinced ourselves that people are lost without the gospel. The one who was talking about that, in one instance at least, said there's a second reason maybe why we're not winning more for Christ, and that is we're not convinced that we have an obligation to go out and bring the lost to Christ. Perhaps sometimes we do not think about that as much as we should. And that brings on another point that I want to emphasize from this chapter. And I want you to see it as a thread running throughout the entire chapter. And that is that effort needs to be made to bring the lost to be saved, or to bring those that are in the world to Christ, or those who have left and gone back to the world back to Christ. Notice some of the words that are used. Look at verse 4 again. What man of you having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost? Notice that idea, go after. That suggests some effort, doesn't it? To go means to leave where you are and go in another, or go in a direction to another place, to go after. It also suggests that we need to go where the lost are. Now, usually when we say that, we think in terms of going to foreign countries. And there are a lot of places where the gospel has not been taught. And we are all aware of the Great Commission to take the gospel to the whole world. But I wonder sometimes if we think about those that are lost in our own area, those that we may see day by day who are not New Testament Christians. Are we willing to go after them, whether it be one who has never come to Christ or one who has been faithful and has gone astray, as in this case of the sheep? But at least he says, go after. And then there is a statement in verse 5 that catches my attention on this. When he hath found him, he layeth it on his shoulders, rejoicing. Not only is there effort to go out to find this one, but there's effort to assist that person in coming back. I wonder sometimes if we discourage people, not really intending to, when we ought to be encouraging them. The idea of carrying him on his shoulders is putting forth effort to assist that sheep, in this case, to assist that one that is lost in coming back. And then in verse 8, notice what the woman did relative to the coin. It says that she lit a candle so that she could see what was happening, and she swept the floor, swept the house, and she looked diligently till she found it. Sometimes we may give up too quickly when we're trying to bring people to Christ. Those that make their living as salesmen say that sometimes it takes the fifth call to really make a sale, and that there is the need to go back and go back. There is the case that God may give up on a person, but we should never give up. I'm sure there are times that we get discouraged, and there is the idea that sometimes we're to shake the dust from our feet and go on to greener pastures. But as long as there is any hope for the salvation of a person, we ought to be willing to seek diligently, as this woman did. She was putting light on the subject so she could understand what needed to be done. She was putting forth the effort to sweep where she thought the coin might be lost. And she continued to do that until she found it. As long as a person is alive, there is a possibility of bringing that person to Christ. I have had the experience many times of seeing someone who was what we would call an 11th hour Christian, someone who had turned down the gospel plan of salvation many, many times, and then eventually was brought to Jesus Christ. I said a moment ago, and I say again, God may give up in that he knows the heart of a person and knows when that heart has become so hardened that it cannot be touched with the gospel. But since you and I cannot know the heart of another individual in the way that God does, we need to be willing to continue in any reasonable way to try to bring that person to God, to sweep the house and to seek and to look for, not just hope that person happens into the services or hears something, but to seek for that person. And then in verse 20, I think we see something else that's very helpful on this. And remember, we're talking about the effort that needs to be made on our part. This has to do with the son that came home. He arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. In this case, evidently, the father was waiting and he was watching to see if there was any indication that this son would come home. And when he saw the son coming in the right direction, he didn't just sit there. He ran toward him and had compassion for him and fell on his neck and kissed him. Even when we have made effort to bring someone home to God and it hasn't worked, we need to still have the attitude that's expressed by the Father on this occasion. He was watching and waiting and willing to go halfway, as we might sometimes say, when he saw that there was an interest on the part of his son to come home. I like that word compassion that is used in this verse. When we're dealing with the lost, we need to have compassion toward them. We ought not to take the gospel to anyone in a way that is offensive. We need to stand firm for the truth and not compromise it. But we don't have to be offensive to do that. We need to go with compassion. And somewhat like the lesson we were studying this morning, even though we hate the sin that is involved and stand against that, we are to have compassion toward the person. Even if it is a person that we don't especially like, we're to have compassion for that person and to be ready to welcome that person home. Sometimes when maybe we've had no personal involvement in bringing somebody to Christ. At the point that that person comes to Christ or close to Christ, we can at least begin to have compassion and show interest and encourage that person in every way that we can. If someone comes into our midst here who is an alien sinner and is interested in becoming a Christian, the attitude that all of us take toward him may help determine just how far he goes in obeying the truth. And when someone who has gone astray comes back, if all of us have the attitude of compassion and show love, as we so many times pray for the love that we ought to have in this congregation, if we have that compassion and that love and show it, it's going to cause people to have an easier time, at least, of repenting and making things right as they ought to. So when we look at all three of these cases, we see emphasis placed upon the effort that is to be put forth. With the sheep, go after. With the coin, sweep and seek and look diligently. With the father, waiting and looking, ready to go meet him with a forgiving attitude and with compassion. One other thing that I would emphasize tonight as we look at this chapter in general is the results that are seen. Notice in the case of the sheep in verse 6, when he cometh home, the word home is used there in the sense of being back where he ought to be. We might even use the word fold in this case with the sheep. But when he cometh home, notice that word, he calls his friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me. Here's the idea of being back where one should be And really that idea that was made a moment ago concerning compassion is seen in the results here. Not only was the shepherd glad to bring the sheep back home, but he wanted his friends to know about it. He wanted them to rejoice with him. It's easy sometimes for us to tell others about things that are not so good, and yet sometimes it seems difficult for us to tell others about things that are good. If something good is happening, we need to share that with others. And so he says the results here is not only that this sheep was brought back home, but there was rejoicing with the friends. In verse 9, with the coin, somewhat the same thing. Notice, when she had found it, she calleth her friends and her neighbors together, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the peace which was lost." Here again, the friends are brought in, rejoicing with others, sharing with others. And that even magnifies the rejoicing. And then as we look at the case of the boy, I want you to notice something that's said by him in verse 17. When he came to himself, he said, "How many hired servants of my father's have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger." He remembered his father's house, which is another way of saying home, as we saw it back in verse 6. He realized that he was away from home and he needed to go back home. And the results in this case, when he came to himself, when he was accepted back by his father, there was the idea of him being back home at his father's house. And so you see, when the effort is made, when we recognize that people are lost and the right effort is made, the indication is that there are going to be the right kind of results. And then there are three words that are used that show us the results as far as our hearts are concerned and our attitudes are concerned. In verse 6, verse 7, verse 9, and verse 10, the word joy is mentioned. Joy over one soul that is brought back. In verse 24 and verse 32, the word Mary is used. And in verse 32, the word glad is used. Notice the positive attitude that is there, or at least should be there, on the part of all involved. Those that are brought back, those that have accepted them back. In the case of the son was back involved in being Mary and the joy. The father was, the friends were, the neighbors were. And that's the attitude that we ought to have. We ought to have an attitude of joy, being Mary, and being glad when someone who is lost is saved. Someone who is away is brought back home. Someone who was lost is found and is back in the right place. As we look at these other lessons, we're going to see different types of people who are lost. We're going to see different types of attitudes that existed. We're going to see different sets of circumstances, some right and some wrong, that have to do with the salvation of the lost. But tonight we've emphasized that we need to recognize that some are lost, never having been brought to Christ. Some are lost who've been with Christ and gone astray. Effort needs to be made by all of us in different ways to go after those that are lost. And when they're lost and brought to Christ, the result is salvation on their part and rejoicing on the part of all of us. Tonight, each one of us who is here needs to think about the idea, am I saved or am I lost? If we are saved, we need to be involved in bringing others to Christ. If we are lost, we need to come to Christ. If you are not a Christian and need to be baptized into Christ, or if you are a child of God who needs to come asking for forgiveness, come as together we stand and sing.
And please go home by the way.